Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Pallava Giri Vadadhari. Gopi Jana Pallava Giri Vadadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Chanaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Chanaranjana Jamuna Thira Panachari Jamuna Thira Panachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Pallava Giri Vadadhari Gopi Jana Pallava Giri Vadadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Chanaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Chanaranjana Jamuna Thira Panachari Jamuna Thira Panachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramhamsa Paribrajaka Charja Astotara Sata Sri Simad A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jaya ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramhamsa Paribrajaka Charja Astotara Sata Sri Simad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada Ki Jaya Hananti Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jaya Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jaya Prem Sikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरि गोवर्धन की जय। श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय। श्री नवद्वीप मायापुर धाम की जय। श्री मथुरा धाम की जय। श्री द्वारक धाम की जय। श्री जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय। गंगमयी की जय। यमुनामयी की जय। भक्ति देवी की जय। तुलसी देवी की जय। समवेद भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंदी। All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नथास्मते नाथ सतंग्रि पंकजं विरिंच वैरिंच सुरेन्द्र पंडितं परायनं क्षेमं इहेचतं परम्। न यत्र काला प्रभवेत् परप्रभु न थास्मते नाथ सदङ्ग्रि पङ्कजम् विरिञ्च वैरिञ्च सुरेन्द्र पण्डितम् परायनं क्षेमं इहेचतं परम्। न यत्र काला प्रभवेत् परप्रभु नथास्मथे नाथ सदङ्ग्रि पङ्कजम् विरिञ्च वैरिञ्च सुरेन्द्र पण्डितम् परायनं क्षेममिहेचतं परम्। न यत्र काला प्रभवेत् परप्रभु
Thank you.
please. Done so, Te, unto you, Nata, O Lord, Sada, always, Angri Pankajam, the lotus feet, Vidincha, Brahma, the first living being, Vadincha, sons of Brahma, like Sanak and Sanatan. Sura Indra, the king of heaven. Banditam, worshipped by. Parayanam, the supreme. Kshemam, welfare. Iha, in this life. Ichatam, one who so desires. Param, the highest. Na, never. Yatra, wherein. Kala, inevitable time. Prabhavet, can exert its influence. Paraha, transcendental. Prabhu, the Supreme Lord. The citizen said, O Lord, you are worshipped by all demigods like Brahma, the four sannas, and even the King of Heaven. You are the ultimate rest for those who are really aspiring to achieve the highest benefit of life. You are the supreme transcendental Lord, and inevitable time cannot exert its influence upon you. Om Akyan Timidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Nilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yudha Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Bithamscha, He Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dinabandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostate, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patitanam Bhavanibhyo, Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nama Om Vishnupadaya, Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhaktivedanta, Swami Iti Namine, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvishesha Shunyavari, Astyapyadeshatarine. Hare Krishna. Let us very enthusiastically welcome our two very special guests, my senior godbrothers, beloved well-wishers and mentors, His Grace Shruti Kirti Prabhu and His Grace Vyaski Prabhu. Is something that began after I left 2 years ago, actually. Much more enthusiastically, let us greet them, please. Srila Prabhupada said, when you clap your hands in front of the deities, then the birds of sinful reactions fly away. So today, many met me. All the birds are gone, you could stop. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, text number 7. Before beginning to serve you by trying to speak from this verse, I would like to share just a spontaneous feeling that appeared in my mind upon seeing all of the hundreds and hundreds of mangoes on the altar.
17,000.
Shutakirti Prabhu analytically counted them. Without an adding machine. Amazing. But I'm just thinking, when
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking his devotees on Harinam Sankirtan. They were going through the various villages of Navadvip. And in the Godramdvip area, it was a very sunny day. And they were very thirsty and hungry. But there was nothing around. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took one seed from a mango and pushed it into the ground with his own hands. He dug a little with his fingers and pushed it in and covered it up. Instantly, in front of everyone's eyes, the tree began to grow. Within minutes, it was a full tree, the size of which many decades for an ordinary tree to grow. And within a few more seconds, the tree was covered with mangoes, thousands of mangoes. Maybe 17,000. But many, many mangoes. Each mango had no peel, had no seed. It was pure nectar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then, with his own loving hands, fed each devotee one pure, ripe mango. There was a mango festival. Everyone was eating mangoes. And it is described by Srila Kaviraj Goswami that one mango perfectly satisfied and filled all the desires of each devotee who ate it. There were limitless mangoes, but no one needed more than one. And what was that nectar of the sweetness of those mangoes? Let us just take a moment to imagine what the taste of that mango must have been. Many of you may like mangoes. But imagine a mango that grew simply by the love of Lord Chaitanya for his devotees. Miraculously. It wasn't just pulp and juice. It was Lord Gauranga's love for each devotee that was in that mango. And as he passed out the mangoes, each devotee received a mango flavored by Lord Chaitanya's love for that devotee. It was beyond any conception of intoxication, beyond the somaras of the heavenly worlds. And Lord Chaitanya was most happy. He was happy serving his devotees and seeing them happy. And he was reciprocating with them. Because they were going through hunger and thirst to go through the villages and chant the holy names on Harinam Sankirtan. So after this wonderful mango festival, and today, even 5 centuries later, the place where he planted that mango tree is still a place of pilgrimage. Amagat. Many of you have been. And in the presence of Lord Chaitanya, eating the mangoes, the culmination was all the devotees danced in ecstatic love and loudly chanted the holy names.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
It would be nice if we could distribute all these mangoes to all the devotees. But there's two problems. One of among the 17,000 mangoes. Huh? Oh, 1,700. Okay. You know how I am. 1,700. I think that still there won't be enough for everybody here. And second of all, the temple managers will not be happy if you eat mangoes in the temple. In this verse, Krishna is entering Dwarka. We're reading from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yesterday, I was speaking with Shruti Kirti Prabhu, and he was telling that Srila Prabhupada, he stated that everything that he wanted to say that people of the world need to be fully Krishna conscious is contained within his first canto of translations and purports. I was reading yesterday. It is so astounding how in these purports, what Srila Prabhupada is writing is the most relevant, needed knowledge spoken directly to the people of the whole world today. Srila Prabhupada speaks about the environment. He speaks about the nature of wars. He speaks about the nature of disease. He speaks about greed and hunger for power. Everything that everyone is trying to figure out, Srila Prabhupada is speaking directly. So relevant. Today, it as if he's sitting here in the year 2022 writing these purports for us. And so relevant, not only to India, but the Western world. But once Srila Prabhupada wrote the first canto, every word of it was written at the Radha Damodar temple in his Bhajan Kutir in Vrindavan. He hadn't even come to the West yet. He hadn't physically seen any situation, any culture, or any people beyond India. How could he know? Krishna empowering Srila Prabhupada in such a historical way was giving a message that was universal and timeless. And for those who have the eagerness to receive it, this message of Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's purports are as nectarine as the mangoes that Lord Chaitanya gave to his devotees. But we have to acquire that ability to experience that truth. This story, I would like to very briefly speak some of the lessons and some of the historical context that leads us to this verse. At the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a glorious explanation of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes and the ultimate goal of life. Then there is a setting. Many, many sages from many lands, they assembled in Naimasharanya. It is not far from Lucknow in Ayodhya. It's in that area, Kanpur. They came there because in Kali Yuga there's always disturbances. Don't think because you're a devotee you will not get disturbed. Don't think that even though you have PhDs in technology and engineering and sound control, that you won't disturb everybody. But they saw the suffering. They could see what was going on today. Krishna had just left the world. They were enlightened beings, but they had such a great concern for the suffering of not only a people at that time, but especially the people who would have to undergo the influence of Kali Yuga as it progressed. So to try to bring about blessings to counteract the effects, they didn't just clap their hands. They did so many yajnas, and they had so many prayers. But still, they felt it was insufficient. The power of Kali Yuga is insurmountable. At that time, they approached Suta Goswami and asked him what could be done. What is the purpose of life? How to remove suffering? And ultimately, how to know the Supreme Lord who is within every heart and who was within his eternal abode, and how to serve the Lord with love. Suta Goswami, he was on the bank of the Ganges, Ganga Mai, when Sukadev Goswami spoke to Parikshit. Because he heard in Parampara and he had such exemplary Vaishnav character, all the sages of Naimasharanya felt him to be the most qualified to speak. And how eager they were to hear. Sometimes new devotees are eager to hear. But after we've been around for some years, I know so many things. But these were the greatest, most enlightened sages in the world. They were so eager to hear. Actually, a quality of making spiritual advancement as we become more and more and more eager to hear. Sravana kirtana smarana bandana pada sevana dasya pujana sakhi jana atmani vedana. Hearing and chanting are the foundational principles on the path of bhakti in the association of devotees. Sutta Goswami was so powerful, he didn't need a sound system. And Srila Prabhupada explained that all this modern technology, we're thinking we're making an advancement, but actually this modern technology is compensating for our degradation. And in those days and prior, people didn't need YouTubes and tape recorders and downloads, and because anything they would hear, they would remember their whole life. People could speak in Naimisharanya, no sound system. 80,000 sages are said to have been there. Because each sage was so eager to hear, and Sutta Goswami was so eager to speak, no one missed a word. There's no record that anyone fell asleep. They were so overwhelmed with the sense of urgency. Because when Parikshit Maharaj was hearing from Sukadev Goswami, he was truly in a sense of urgency. It was inevitable that he was going to die in 7 days. How much eager he was. And not just like laying in bed with so many loved ones chanting Hare Krishna. He was going to die by being bit by a snake bird. That's a ghastly death materially. And some of our artists of Srila Prabhupada's wonderful artistic disciples, if you see, when that snake bird is approaching Parikshit Maharaj, it's not like a peacock. He is the most fearful creature imaginable. He's so much venom that fire is coming out of his mouth. Hare Krishna. That's what's going to happen to him in 7 days. So when he was hearing Sukadev Goswami, he was so eager to hear. It was such an urgent need. Yegatam mam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajamyaham. Krishna reciprocates with our enthusiasm and our surrender. Because of that enthusiasm and surrender, Krishna, who's non-different than the Srimad Bhagavatam, non-different than his holy names, reciprocates with us. It's not that we can attain a higher taste. Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna Punja Sravana Kirtan. Because when we have that higher taste, Krishna is so pleased that he removes all obstacles on the path of pure devotional service. That higher taste is given by the Lord within our heart. If the Lord sees we are sincere, and serious and have no ulterior motives. And we're really honestly trying our best to live with the character of a Vaishnava, with enthusiasm to serve, to hear, and to chant. If we make offenses to others, Krishna's not pleased. Even if we chant 120 rounds a day, if Krishna's not pleased with us, it remains more or less an external activity. Because Srila Prabhupada gave us that beautiful prayer for the Maha Mantra. Actually, Maha Mantra is just the invocation of names of Krishna and Radha. But Srila Prabhupada taught us the mood. Dear Srimati Radharani, dear Sri Krishna, please engage me in your loving service. Loving service, that's the highest, most comprehensive subject in all of creation. Samsidhir Haritoshanam, it means to please Krishna. Our actions are in harmony with our intentions to serve Krishna. And if we truly have that intention to please Krishna and we try our best under the guidance of Sri Guru and Gauranga, then Krishna's pleased. And Krishna emphatically declares, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu even more emphatically declared by his own actions and words, that Krishna is pleased when we are servant of servant of servant. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasi hishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sada. And in this spirit we earnestly take shelter of the holy names of the Lord. So Suta Goswami is speaking. Savai pung sang paro dharma yato bhaktir hokshaje ahoitaki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. The supreme occupation for all humanity is that which brings about loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to fully satisfy the self. That verse is the very essence of all religion, all spirituality, and the very essence of life. In Kali Yuga, there are endless distractions to try to draw our mind away from these things. Distractions coming from within ourselves, due to experiences of the past, due to insecurities that are inevitably caused by life, due to fears, due to desires, due to frustrations. And Maya takes all those experiences to give us an excuse to be distracted. And externally, the world, it is very systematically orchestrated to distract people. Vajahure Manasvi Nandanandana Avai Charanaravindare. Therefore we pray, my dear mind, just worship Krishna. Then you could rise above all these fears. When Srila Prabhupada was on Jaladuta, it's very interesting. In his prayers, he's praying, Krishna, only if you speak through me, and only if you give the people the ability to hear your words through me, will they be happy. Srila Prabhupada was praying. He had heart attacks. He had seasickness. He was going to a place he had no idea of who he was going to meet, where he was going to stay, anything. Strange country, 10,000 miles from Vrindavan. Now, if you and me were in that state, 69 years old, we would probably be saying, Krishna, I hope somebody's there at the port to pick me up. Prabhupada didn't ask anything for himself. He was simply praying, Krishna, give me the words to make these people happy. And he was praying for people he never met. You know, sometimes we pray for our family members, our friends. He was coming to a country where he knew no one. And his only prayer to Krishna is, give me the words to make them happy. After this beautiful questions and answers between Sonak Rishi, who was a spokesman for all the sages. On behalf of all the other sages, he was asking the most relevant questions. Suta Goswami was replying. It was then, after these questions and answers, that Suta Goswami begins this narration that we have today. He describes after the battle of Kurukshetra what happened. So many people died. Hardly any survived. After this 18-day war, which is described in much graphic detail by Srila Vyasadeva in Mahabharata, nobody celebrated. Everyone was just tired and brokenhearted. Usually in a victory, like, you know, after World War II, when the soldiers came back, people were throwing, not flowers, they'd throw like, you know, paper or something. And there's marching bands and there's a great welcome. When a team is victorious, you know, either the country or the city is celebrating like anything. And here's the greatest war that ever was, Kurukshetra. And after the war, it was just, all right, it's done. And everybody felt miserable. You know, they were crying. And they were so tired that most people just went to sleep. Except one person. The son of Dronacharya, Aswatthama. His anger, his vengeance was such a blazing fire in his mind, he could not sleep. In the middle of the night, he was fuming on getting revenge because his father, Dronacharya, was killed in the battle, and he considered it a very unfair death. Aswatthama went into the tent where the Pandava's five sons were sleeping. And he ruthlessly slaughtered them in their sleep. Didn't even give them a chance to stand up and say Hare Krishna. What to speak of give them a chance to fight back. He murdered them. When the news came to Draupadi, she was utterly brokenhearted. She had five sons. That's all. She had no other children. Now Draupadi is childless. And all the Pandavas just lost their child. Feeling the grief of losing their sons, and seeing Draupadi pathetically crying, heart utterly broken, Arjuna, the greatest among Kshatriyas, he wanted justice, real justice. And he told Draupadi that we will do the last rites of our children, and I will bring you the head of Aswatthama to stand on. And along with Krishna, they charged after Aswatthama. And Aswatthama was scared. He was a great warrior, a great hero, but seeing Arjuna charging at him with Krishna on the chariot, Aswatthama did not just stand back to fight. He took his chariot and drove away as fast as he could, and he was going farther and farther and farther, and Arjuna and Krishna were getting closer and closer and closer. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells that Aswatthama's horses became exhausted. They had to stop. There was nowhere to go. In total desperation, in fear for his life, Aswatthama sipped water, chanted a mantra, and released the Brahmastra. Srila Prabhupada explains this Brahmastra as a nuclear weapon, more powerful than any of the nuclear weapons today, but so accurate that they only cause harm to the target in which they're aimed. So Aswatthama sent this nuclear weapon, the Brahmastra, and it went into the sky. Everything became so bright, like another sun shining. The heat and the light was affecting the entire world. Arjuna was bewildered. He turned to Krishna and asked, "What's happening?" And Krishna said, "This is the Brahmastra." Now, Aswatthama knew the science of creating the Brahmastra, but he never learned how to retract it. And an actual moral mature, responsible Kshatriya will not release any weapon that they do not have the control to bring back. So this is a totally immoral situation. Krishna told Arjuna that you have also been taught brahmastras, but you know how to do it right. So with your brahmastra, neutralize Aswatthamas. Arjuna sipped water and chanted mantras, and the brahmastra went up, and the two brahmastras met. It was unimaginable. It was like the ultimate fireworks. You know, at Diwali, you go up those fireworks. This was like the ultimate fireworks. Two brahmastras meeting in the sky and exploding. The light, the sound, the heat. Then Arjuna captured Aswatthama. Krishna said, although he's a Brahmin, he's such a sinful murderer, he must be punished. Do not release him. Arjuna brought him back to the camp of the Pandavas. Arjuna threw Aswatthama at the feet of Draupadi. Draupadi saw him. She was grieving so deeply for the death of her children, and here is the person who mercilessly, intentionally killed them. Arjuna was ready to kill him. Draupadi, she said, he is the son of your teacher, Drona. It is our culture to honor and respect our teacher. And I am feeling the pain of being childless. Dronacharya's wife, Kripi, only has one child. If you kill Aswatthama, she will suffer the same as me. In honor of Kripi, you must release him. It's really fascinating because when Draupadi spoke this, Yudhisthira Maharaj agreed, yes, what Draupadi's saying is true. Arjuna completely changed. And even Krishna, Nakula, Sahadev, they all agreed what Draupadi is saying is according to true religious principles. We must release him. Bhimasena did not agree. He thought this was just too much sentimentalism. He must be killed immediately. Because, you know, Bhima's son was killed by him too. What to speak of seeing Draupadi weeping and crying in agony? Bhima was infuriated. He must be killed. So here is everybody on Draupadi's side, and then there's Bhima, who is Arjuna's elder brother. Arjuna, you know, historically, he loves to turn to Krishna when he's confused. He didn't want to disappoint his elder brother. Bhima? I don't think any of us would want to displease Bhima. And at the same time, he definitely did not want to cause more misery to Draupadi when she was already in so much misery. So what to do? How to balance this contradiction of ideological conclusions among great devotees? Have any of you had that experience in your lives? It's not just something unique in ISKCON or anything like that. It's the history of the universe. And Krishna indicated to Arjuna how to kill him and not kill him. They cut his hair in such a way and took the jewel from his head, which he was so proud of. And by doing this, he was utterly humiliated. And Krishna tells in Gita, for a Kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. They put so much shame upon Aswatthama that he was suffering in humiliation, and then they just let him go. So his mother was happy because he's alive. And Draupadi was happy that Kripi, the mother, was not suffering like her. Paradukaduki, to feel another suffering as your own. And another's happiness as your own. In the Western world, there's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would want them to do to you. Now among Kshatriyas, justice is foundational to law and order for the protection of society. But here we find Draupadi's motherly feelings overrided everything. And even Krishna. Krishna said kill him at the beginning, but then Krishna changed his mind after hearing Draupadi. Actually, this is what I want. This, what she's saying is correct. They released him. Then Krishna coronated Yudhisthira as the emperor of the world. Krishna then organized for Yudhisthira Maharaj 3 Aswamedha Yajnas. Because by doing that, Yudhisthira Maharaj's fame, power, recognition would be unparalleled throughout the world. Yudhisthira Maharaj, after so many years of exile and torture and death threats and humiliations and horrible propaganda against him, all this stuff, being homeless, now he is the emperor of the world. Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev, they are the happiness. Unlike fighting among brothers in this world, their pure heart simply wanted to assist their elder brother, Yudhisthira Maharaj. They had no other desire in their hearts. Now everything seems to be at a closure and so perfect. after Krishna, by his divine arrangement, made Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, the kings in Hastinapur, with their thrones and with their palaces and with everybody who they loved them. And in this area of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes how the world was as soon as Yudhisthira became the king. There was not too much heat or too much cold. The rivers were totally pure and the mountains were supplying so much vegetation and flowers and fruits. There was no shortage of anything for anyone in the world. The oceans were providing pearls and jewels. The land was full of nutritious crops. The trees were blossoming. Everything was so auspicious. And it especially tells in the Srimad Bhagavatam how the cows were so happy. They were spontaneously giving so much milk. You didn't even have to milk them. The pastures, the grass was being, what we say, watered by the milk dripping from the cows. Because Yudhisthira Maharaj, Dharmaraj, he considered every person of every species of life to be his own child. Praja. Even the trees and the bushes, but to speak of the insects and the lizards and the birds and the animals and all varieties of the varnas and ashrams and beyond that of humanity. He loved each one as his own child. And as a father, what does it mean to love? Love means to take responsibility. It's not just an emotion. To love Srila Prabhupada is to take responsibility for what he expects of us. To saying Jai Prabhupada and saying I love him, that's nice. But real love is tested by how we take responsibility for the object of our love. In a temple, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, how do we act? We can sit and say, I love you, Radharani and Gopinath. I love you with all my heart. And please say that. But at the same time, the love is actually of substance when we take responsibility for them. And interestingly, responsibility is very much in the details of how we serve them. Of course, in order to have details, there's a lot of service and responsibility you have to perform just to get a detail. But then when the details are there, that's a time when we could really show our responsibility to do what Srila Prabhupada expected of us. If we're doing something for Krishna, if we're doing something for Srimati Radharani, if we're actually conscious of that, then whatever we do, we will do it to the ultimate perfection humanly possible for us. If Srila Prabhupada was personally coming to your house now, you know, you would probably clean up really nicely. And you'd probably really have a nice feast for him. And you would have a nice sitting place. You wouldn't just think, well, you know, Prabhupada's coming. You know, just tell me when he arrives. If we're doing something for our gurus, for Srila Prabhupada, if we're doing something for Radha and Gopinath, then whatever we do, we will try to do it with the maximum attention to detail and perfection. That means we actually believe that they're people. That means we actually believe that this service is for them. Otherwise, devotional service can be a very external, shallow ritual too, unless we're Krishna conscious. The word Krishna conscious is so deep and so profound. But because we hear it so much, we just, you know, say it and hear it. Krishna conscious. To be conscious of Krishna. That means I'm taking responsibility to please Krishna with who I associate with my actions, with my words, and to do my service. To do our service the best possible way. We were speaking the other day, Lord Chaitanya. I think you're all used to me diverting to various subjects. I'm sorry that... I was never trained with formal education or anything like that. So what you see is what you get. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told the superintendent of Jagannath's temple that tomorrow I want to personally, along with my associates, clean the Gundicha temple. Please supply me brooms and buckets for water. The superintendent said, you know, we have so many pandas here in Puri and so many volunteers. We can do it. You're Mahaprabhu. You're a great sannyasi. You shouldn't be doing this. But Lord Chaitanya insisted, this service is an honor for me. And Lord Chaitanya, the next day, with his own hands, he distributed the brooms to each devotee. How amazing, how wonderful. Usually we think of the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Lord, bestowing, you know, all sorts of benedictions. Lord Chaitanya benedicted and blessed every one of his devotees with a broom. What does that mean? That means humble service is the ultimate blessing the Lord gives us. The holy name of the Lord, Cheto Dharapana Marachana. Krishna appears in his name to clean our minds, to clean our hearts. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said when you chant the holy names in the morning, like a broom, if we cleanse our hearts. And actually, what we do externally on the path of devotional service is the way we clean our hearts. Gundicha is our own mind and heart that we're cleaning. And we can think in any, whether it's our office of our home, if we're doing it for Krishna, what to speak of Krishna's temple. And what enthusiasm Mahaprabhu had. And he kept saying, this is for Jagannath. We have to do it the ultra best. Lord Chaitanya's associates, they were avatars. Advaitacharya is Mahavishnu. Nityananda Prabhu is Balaram. Murari Gupta is Hanuman. So many of the greatest avatars, Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Rai, are Lalita and Vishaka, gopis. And Lord Chaitanya's sweeping. He was the first one. He handed out all the brooms and then he started sweeping and he said, everybody collect your dust and your straw and your sand and put it in a pile. And all 300 devotees made one pile and Lord Chaitanya made his own separate pile and it was far higher, wider than all the other devotees together. Setting an example. Can you imagine how clean that temple was? And after that, cleanliness. Like, to details that nobody has ever seen before. And all those big piles of everything they gathered. Then Lord Chaitanya said, this is for Jagannath. We have to clean it again. We have to analyze, examine, seek, and find finer particles of dust, sand, and straw. And they swept and swept and swept again. And then thousands of buckets of water from all the various nearby wells from Indradrumna Sarovar. They washed and they washed and they washed. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in such ecstasy cleaning it for Jagannath that sometimes he didn't need water. Tears were flowing from his eyes and he was, with his own cloth, he was shining everything that he was cleaning. And when it was just absolutely sparkling, Lord Chaitanya was happy. Yes, now Jagannath, he will receive our offering. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Such a simple thing. In Varanasi, he spoke for 2 months to Sanatana Goswami. In Prayag, he spoke for 10 days to Srila Rupa Goswami. And here, all these associates, they're just having a festival of sweeping and brooming and washing. And when it was all done, they had a wonderful kirtan, and Lord Chaitanya himself wanted to distribute prasad to each devotee. But there was a problem, because he wanted to please the devotees so much that his hand would hold no less than what 5 people could eat. So this was, they didn't like leave remnants. Because this is coming from the hand of the Lord, you have to. So Swarup Damodar Goswami said, please let us serve. Such a festival. Back to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, Srila Prabhupada in Radha Damodar Temple in Sri Vrindavan Dham gives an extensive introduction to the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein he tells a summary of the whole life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Srila Prabhupada said what Lord Chaitanya and his associates did, how they lived, their association with each other, their compassion to all living beings, these pastimes are the culmination of Srimad Bhagavatam. By writing Lord Chaitanya's life in the introduction, Srila Prabhupada is teaching us to read Srimad Bhagavatam through the lens of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life and teachings. Because Lord Chaitanya taught not only the knowledge, but the spirit of its purpose. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Radha and Krishna, the culmination of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the 10th canto. The love between Srimati Radharani and Sri Krishna. That's the culmination. Lord Chaitanya is Radha and Krishna in one form, taking the role of a devotee to teach us how to be devotees. And Balaram is Nityananda Prabhu, going house to house with Haridas Thakur, Lord Brahma, with straw between their teeth, begging people, please, you will be my life and soul. Just take the name of Krishna, worship Krishna, make Krishna the treasure of your life. All the devotees were serving of the servants. Because that's the spirit we need to have to actually hear the Srimad Bhagavatam in a way that our hearts are transformed. After these three Aswamedha Yajnas and coronating Yudhisthira Maharaj as the emperor of Bharatvarsha, Krishna went to his chariot to depart for Dwarka, because that was his home. The residents of Dwarka, the Yadu dynasty, every moment that Krishna was away, they were crying in separation. It was unbearable. Srila Prabhupada describes in these beautiful purports that for a true devotee, we are so attracted to Krishna that we can't live without him. Vyavashayatmaka bhutir ekeha kuranandana. In a pure state, that's just our natural consciousness. Our mind is drawn toward Krishna. Our heart and our love is drawn toward Krishna. And when he's with us, we're feeling the ultimate satisfaction of the heart. And when he's away, we're feeling the ultimate suffering in the ecstasy of love and separation. But you can't forget him. And this idea of viraha bhava, or separation, is a way that Krishna is forever reciprocating with his devotees' love. Whether physically present or in another place. So here's all the citizens of Dwarka. What was the opulence of that city with all of its palaces? Every palace in Dwarka was more opulent, luxurious, and comfortable than Indra's palace in heaven. It's not, you know, today, you know, we're kind of feeling bored, so some people turn on televisions, or some people, you know, try to distract their attention. The people of Dwarka had every comfort, every luxury, every pleasurable object of the world to enjoy. But they were all crying, because everything they saw reminded them of Krishna, and Krishna's not here. So Krishna threw separation in their hearts with ever increasing their love. And Krishna, wanting to reciprocate, he was finally, after going to Kurukshetra and being Arjuna's chariot driver, and after going to coronating Yudhisthira Maharaj as the king and all of these things, finally, my family in Dwarka are waiting for me. He had children and he had grandchildren and he had queens and wives and he had friends and he had devotees. They all miss me so much. How could they live? I must go back. And he was just about to leave. Suddenly, he heard a crying. It was Uttara, the wife of Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu is the son of Arjuna and Subhadra, Krishna's sister. Uttara is pregnant. The sole surviving person to carry on the generations of the Pandavas was the child in her womb. There was no one else. The Pandavas had no children, no grandchildren. There was only Uttara's child. In a helpless state, she ran to Krishna crying that the child in my womb is in danger. There's an iron arrow that's blazing with fire that's coming to kill the embryo. My child. Aswatthama sent a brahmastra specifically not to hurt anyone else, but to kill the five Pandavas and the child in the womb, to exterminate the Pandavas forever. Some people, they just don't change. You know, Draupadi, right in front of him, he was laying there on the ground, about to die with Bhima's wrath and Krishna's wrath and Arjuna's wrath, and Draupadi is begging and praying, please let him go. And then he's let go. And then he wants to kill a baby who's still in the womb of mother and all the Pandavas. Krishna took his Sudarshan chakra and neutralized to protect the Brahmastra, to protect the Pandavas. And this Brahmastra, you know, it could go in many directions. You know, modern science, sometimes a bomb goes, missiles going in all directions, and they're laser pointed with computer sciences to hit a special target. Well, this is a very, very crude technology. Ashwatthama was like the most, he was a very skilled nuclear technician. A part of that Brahmastra was still going right to kill the little embryo Parikshit Maharaj. The sole surviving heir of the Pandavas. Krishna, who's the Paramatma within the heart, he moved to cover Parikshit, the little baby, covered him with his own body so that the little baby did not feel any pain whatsoever. But like Prahlad, by the mercy of Narada Muni, he could understand all the teachings when he was in an embryo. Similarly, Parikshit Maharaj, I guess it's pretty dark there in the womb when you're an embryo, but he could see Krishna's beautiful form covering his body and saving his life. And upon seeing that, he fell in love with Krishna. Before he saw anything in this world outside of his mother's womb, he saw Krishna. And what was his qualification? His mother's love. Uttara was begging Krishna, "Let this Brahmastra kill me. I don't mind. But please protect my child." That was her selfless love. It was that selfless love that invoked Krishna's mercy to reveal himself to Parikshit. And Parikshit, when he finally did take birth, he was just always looking for Krishna. He had that higher taste. Nothing in the world could really attract him from his birth because he saw Krishna. And he felt Krishna's mercy in such a way. He owed his life to Krishna. As all do, as every one of us. At that time, now Parikshit was protected, the Pandavas were protected, and Krishna was about to leave for Dwarka. As he was on his chariot, Kunti Devi, the mother of the Pandavas, approached Krishna with tears of love in her eyes. This section of Srimad Bhagavatam is so much centered around motherly love, actually. You know, that feminine energy of how it affects Krishna. Kunti Devi, she suffered the most throughout the Mahabharata. And it's already 10:30, and I haven't gotten to the verse yet, so I don't want to tell the whole story of Kunti because I don't want to inconvenience you so much. Of course, we do have a lot of mangoes. Kunti had to keep that secret from her earliest childhood of who her first son was, Radheya or Karna. How painful was that? She loved that child as much as her own, as the Pandavas. Her firstborn. she had to see her eldest son and his younger brothers become the absolute worst enemies who wanted to kill each other. And she couldn't, and they didn't know they were brothers, and she couldn't tell them. Why she couldn't tell them? There are so many psychological ways of looking at Mahabharata, but ultimately it was Krishna's desire, and she was surrendered. What to speak of, you know, in the house of Lakh, she goes on a little holiday with her sons, and her own relatives, the Kurus, Dhritarashtra. She loves these people as her own family. They made the house out of lac, flammable material, to burn them alive to death. How cruel! It was Vidura who informed them. They had to secretly escape and be incognito. And then when they do come back to Indraprastha and Hastinapur, there was that, you know, Shakuni and Duryodhana and they had that gambling match. Totally cheated the Pandavas. In front of everybody, they brought such dishonor upon Draupadi. And they banned it. They took everything away from Yudhisthira Maharaj and banished him to the forest, along with Draupadi and the Pandavas. Who suffered the most? Kunti, the mother. And now, you know, she saw her grandchildren, you know, the five children of Draupadi that were killed in their sleep. They were Kunti's grandchildren too. How she suffered. All the disgrace for years and years. And now, by the mercy of Krishna, Yudhisthira Maharaj is the emperor, and the whole world is celebrating his being their king. And now there's total comfort, and all opposition doesn't exist. In one sense, it's the first moment of safety that Kunti saw in decades and decades. She's crying for Krishna. Please don't leave. Vipara shantu tashashwat tatra tatra jagatku. In all the calamities that have happened, I had no other shelter than you. And in remembering you, I am with you, and you are with me. But now that everything's so nice, I may not turn to you with my whole heart for shelter. I may forget you. So let the calamities, the tragedies, the sufferings, let them keep coming so that I can seek shelter of you. Such a prayer. It's actually quite unimaginable. We can speak it. We can teach it. And when things are nice, we can kind of think I'm like that. But you all know what I mean. When tragedy comes to our loved ones, when tragedy comes to the world, when tragedy comes to me, how many can honestly pray, Radha Gopinath, just let it keep coming? Nobody can do. Kunti could do. And we cannot imitate. But that's the standard. That's the standard of devotee. And in many ways, what it means is there is nothing more sacred, nothing more valuable than remembering Krishna. She's willing to go through anything if she could remember Krishna. And yet most of us, we intentionally do things to forget Krishna. We don't say, I'm doing it to forget Krishna. But we know if we do it, that's what's going to happen. Such intense devotion. She offered beautiful prayers. So important are those prayers of Queen Kunti. Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles, I think in 1972 or 73, Shruti Kirti Prabhu was probably sitting right next to his Vyasa-san, listening to every word with an eagerness to serve. Shruti Kirti Prabhu was Srila Prabhupada's personal servant for many years. I think more years than anybody else was. So as he's sitting at Prabhupada's side, listening to every class he's giving, he's in such a service attitude that I'm sorry if I'm portraying things, but I'm just imagining, you're probably thinking, you know, I have to make sure there's enough water in Prabhupada's cup, and I have to make sure that there's no flies on Prabhupada. He's just every little detail. That's what we're speaking about, details. Every detail, that was what he was eager to serve. And in that mood, he was hearing. But Srila Prabhupada gave classes, and he was so enthusiastic to give classes on the prayers of Kunti Devi that he even had some of them filmed. Yes, I think that was the first time that they filmed Prabhupada giving classes, is prayers of Kunti in Los Angeles. And also there's beautiful recordings of Srila Prabhupada reciting, singing all the prayers of Kunti Devi. How important these prayers. Kunti Devi's gratitude. Kunti Devi's love. Kunti Devi's compassion. Kunti Devi's focus on the shelter of remembering the Lord. And practically the comprehensive conclusions of all Vedic knowledge is contained within her prayers. After Kunti Devi offered her prayers, Krishna went back inside the palace of Hastinapur just to say goodbye to everyone again. And while he was there, Yudhisthira Maharaj approached him. Yudhisthira Maharaj was crying in sorrow. Now most of us, if we're the victorious over the greatest battle ever, and now we're the king, and we have the whole world at our, you know, to serve, we would be happy. But Yudhisthira Maharaj is weeping. He's crying. I'd like to go back, just because there's something I thought of. Do you remember long ago in this class when I was speaking about Draupadi praying, please forgive, please release Aswatthama? Yudhisthira Maharaj totally agreed with her and supported her. Yudhisthira Maharaj is the son of Yamaraj. And Yamaraj, you know, he doesn't do that. I mean, if there's anybody in this universe that makes sure justice is met, it's Yamaraj. And here is Yudhisthira respecting the feelings in the heart of Draupadi. Wholeheartedly. So now Yudhisthira Maharaj, after Krishna accomplishes everything for him, Yudhisthira is crying. He speaks to Krishna, blaming himself for all the suffering in the world. Because of me, how many people died in the battle of Kurukshetra? Because of me, how many children, sons and daughters, have no father? Because of me, how many mothers have no sons? Because of me, how many wives are widows? How much crying in the world? How much death? It's my fault. It's just so that I could be the king. So many great sages, Vyasadeva, even Krishna tried to pacify him. But in his humility, he could not be pacified. And Srila Prabhupada, in this context, he explains Yudhisthira Maharaj was a transcendental person. He was a pure devotee. He was enlightened. He was beyond the bodily concept of life. He was above all material designations. Why is he suffering so much? Because of his soft heart. Because of his humble nature, but ultimately because it was Krishna's will. Mahajano yena gadasa panta, we must learn from great souls. If anybody had justification to blame people for their sufferings, it was Yudhisthira. But he didn't blame anyone. He took the full responsibility. This is, again, impossible. And even Krishna could not pacify his heart. Krishna had a special plan. He told Yudhisthira Maharaj and all the Pandavas, let us go back to Kurukshetra, because Bhishma, who is about to die, is laying on the cold field of battle. They had a procession, and Krishna arranged it in such a way, he wanted Bhishma to see Yudhisthira and the Pandavas in their opulence and glory. Yudhisthira Maharaj, Krishna made sure he was dressed as the emperor of the world, the Pandavas as the royal princes, there was a procession to Kurukshetra. And it is described, Bhishma was such a great soul. Narada Muni was there. Vyasadeva. Parvat Muni. Gautam Rishi. Kashyapa Muni. Vasishtha Muni. Vishwamitra Muni. They all came to be there for Bhishma. And when they arrived, from his neck to his toes, you could not put a single finger between the arrows. That's how many arrows pierced his body. And the arrows went from his front through his entire body into the ground. When the Pandavas arrived, Krishna offered his pranams to Bhishma. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev, they all bowed down to Bhishma. And Bhishma saw Yudhisthira Maharaj as the king. His heart was filled with joy. What an inconceivable pastime that Krishna orchestrated to completely enthrall our minds and our hearts, and to go so deep into what a Vaishnav truly is, and who a Vaishnav truly is, and how we should perceive the world. This is such a deep subject matter. Bhishma was the commander in the chief of Duryodhana's army. More than anyone else, he was slaughtering the Pandavas' army. Why are they all coming to him and bowing down with pure, unmotivated love? Bhishma is one of the most misunderstood people in the history of the world. He was on the wrong side. And Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna wanted to teach the world that even if you are the most skilled, the most victorious, the most undefeated, the most intelligent, the most heroic of all persons in the planet, which Bhishma was, if you're against Krishna and his devotees, it's a matter of time till you will lose. Bhishma knew Krishna's will, so he accepted the role wherein Duryodhana, the most envious rascal offender, was completely dependent on Bhishma for this battle. And Krishna wanted to be with him at the time of death. Yudhisthira Maharaj looked up at Yudhisthira Bhishma. With tears in his eyes, he was in ecstasy. He fought with his full power in Kurukshetra, but he wanted to lose. It was his goal in life to lose the battle, even though he was trying his best to win. Does that make sense? This is that verse Prabhupada quotes, that no one can understand the mind of a Vaishnava. That definitely applies to Bhishma. And Bhishma looks up at Yudhisthira, and they're seeing him in this situation, and with such awe and reverence and love and tear-filled eyes, they're hearing every word he's saying. Yudhisthira Maharaj said, how could it be that Dharmaraj, Yudhisthira Maharaj, who is the most pious religious person in the world, could suffer so bad throughout his life? How could Kunti, Yudhisthira, and the Pandavas, why did they have to suffer so much? Why was there so much injustice upon them? They didn't create any bad karma. And then Yudhisthira Maharaj gave the answer. It is all due. And Srila Prabhupada's translation. Please hear each word of these two words very carefully. Bhishma said, it is all due to inevitable time. This word, inevitable. Inevitable means it's going to happen. Inevitable completely negates all maybes. Yes? Or perhaps. Or I think. Inevitable. Inevitable time. It affects everyone, whoever we are. And the controller of time is Krishna. And in these translations, Srila Prabhupada describes the material world is a place of problems and suffering for everyone. Srila Prabhupada said, even the most pious person with the best karma has to suffer in this world. And problems will come to them. How is that? We study laws of karma and we're thinking, you know, for every action there's an equal reaction. If I'm pious, everything is going to be so happy and healthy and everybody's going to live forever and all that. Prabhupada's saying, and Bhishma's saying, in even the most pious people, whatever your karma, certainly karma is going to affect, but still you have to suffer and there's going to be all kinds of, Prabhupada said, this world, everyone is entangled in material perplexities. That's in the Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada's choice of words sometimes, in the, like encyclopedias in one word. Material perplexities. Entangled in material perplexities. That's what the world is. Not long ago, when I was in lockdown because of COVID-19 pandemic, I was just happily not having to interact with anyone. And oh, what a liberated luxury that felt like. But I was listening to a recording of Srila Prabhupada. Do I have time? Since I'm leaving tomorrow, I'll kind of put a few days into this class. Srila Prabhupada said, now, achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva. Inconceivable, simultaneous one indifference. Srila Prabhupada said one sentence that when you first hear it, your mind goes through all kinds of contradictions. Because what he said was the most pessimistic thing anybody could say in this world. And at the same time, the same words were the ultimate optimistic things anybody could say in this world. Really, I meditated on this one sentence for days. It was just incredible. It was so pessimistic. At the same time, it was so optimistic. I'm going to speak Srila Prabhupada's words for you. And Srila Prabhupada just said it in the course of a class. And sometimes these jewels, of course, every word Prabhupada says is a jewel, but sometimes certain jewels could really transform us. He said, a Vaishnav expects problems and suffering to come at every moment. Not every minute, not every hour, not every day or week or month or year. A Vaishnav expects suffering and problems to come at every moment. Now that sounds pessimistic. Let's vote. You can raise your hands. Don't clap or anything like that. How many vote for it being pessimistic? Raise your hands. How many vote for optimistic? How many are bewildered? If from a material perspective, what kind of a psychological depression you'll be in if you're expecting misery at every moment. It's quite psychotic, actually. But Prabhupada is saying, that's what a Vaishnav does. He's giving a definition. He's given many definitions of a Vaishnav, but this is one of them. A Vaishnav is one who expects to suffer at every moment with problems. How is it supremely optimistic? Because if we're expecting that, then we'll be taking shelter of Krishna like Kunti Devi with our whole heart at every moment. Our japa won't just be trying to get it done. Our japa will, every moment we're expecting suffering, Hare Krishna, we're really chanting kirtan. We're not just, you know, listening to the music. We're taking shelter of Krishna's holy names when we hear the bhajans of Thakur Bhaktivinoda or Narottam Das Thakur or Lochan Das Thakur. That's what they're usually singing about. Hari Hari Vipale. Narottam Das Thakur, the most pure-hearted person, is so humble. I'm burning in the fire of material existence. Save me, Krishna. And he's in the mood of a gopi. That awareness of seeking shelter of Krishna. And as Kunti said, when we remember Krishna with that sincerity, we never have to suffer birth and death again. were actually in the highest ecstasy, ananda, premananda of love when we're surrendering to Krishna in that way. And from another perspective, one of the greatest frustrations of life is when we're expecting things to go the way we want them to be. We're expecting other people to treat us like we like to be treated. We're expecting my health to be, you know, happy and full of long years of living. And we're expecting the temperature to be nice, especially in air-conditioned temple room like this. To the degree we expect, we will be frustrated because the nature of entanglement within material perplexities is that it doesn't matter who you are, dukkalayam ashashvatam, you're going to suffer. Adiatmaka, adibhotaka, adidaivaka. These are supernatural energies controlling creation. And they're all operating, infused by the power of inevitable time. Suffering is inevitable. Death is inevitable for ourselves, for everybody around us. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire. But the soul doesn't die. So if we're expecting problems, then when they come, it's expected. So we just deal with it. We're not all frustrated. Why is this happening to me? I chanted my rounds. I'm a pious person. I've tried to serve so many others, and I distributed so many books, and I did so many artis, and I offered so many mangoes. Why me? But a Vaishnava doesn't think that way. A Vaishnava expects suffering at any time. So when the suffering and the problems come, I'm in this material world. You know, during the monsoons, it's going to rain. It's beyond my control. That's life. So we deal with it in the best way that pleases Krishna. And if things are going good, and we're not expecting them to go good, oh, we are so happy and so grateful. I don't deserve this. We celebrate. But if we're expecting something to go good, we don't really feel that much happiness when it does go good because, you know, it's supposed to. I deserve it. I'm expecting it. So we feel joy in the suffering and we feel joy in the happiness with grateful hearts. And through it all, we praise Krishna by chanting the holy names.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
Thank you for giving me that break. Bhishma, he explained to Yudhisthira Maharaj that Krishna is the controller of all controllers, the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. Everything is ultimately happening directly or indirectly by his will. And then Bhishma, he echoes one of the most consistently proclaimed truths in all Vaishnava literature. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, and all of these literatures. That Krishna is equal to everyone. Krishna is equal to all. Krishna is a well-wisher for everyone. Krishna agrees as the Paramatma to be in the heart of every living entity, in all species of life. Whatever we have done, whatever we have not done, Krishna's our ever well-wishing friend within our heart. And he's willing to totally give himself to everyone if we surrender. He's extolling Krishna's merciful nature. He's not partial to anyone. He's everyone's friend. And in this, Srila Prabhupada explains that Bhishma's telling everyone on that battlefield of Kurukshetra, so many people died. How is that being a friend of everyone? Because Krishna was present on the battlefield, everyone went back to Godhead. And these were the most sinful, many of them were the most sinful, envious, demoniac people with such massive loads of horrible, dark karma. But Krishna gave them all liberation. Because there was a dharmic cause. And because ultimately, you know, Krishna let people play out their envy and everything like that, and he used it all for the higher purpose of enlightening the whole world for all time to come. Whoever chooses. Bhishma is saying, he is equal to all, he is the friend of all. And just see, I'm helplessly laying in this cold battlefield about to die. And Krishna came all the way here just to be with me. How he is a friend of everyone. And he's remembering Krishna. I was Krishna's enemy. I was on the verge of killing his devotee Arjuna with my arrows. Krishna made a promise that he would not lift a weapon and he would not fight. He would only be charioteer. But he told Arjuna, you declare it boldly that my devotee will not perish. So when Arjuna was defeated, helpless and about to die by my power, Krishna jumped off the chariot, picked up a wheel from a chariot, and ran toward me like death personified. And well, this rasa of Bhishma, he's in ecstasy praising Krishna. That his hair and his whole body was covered with the dust from the hooves of the horses on the battlefield. And Krishna's complexion was beautiful, blue like a tamal tree. And as his eyes were like lotus petals, his moon, like was, his face was like the moon. His cloth was brilliantly yellow. And with angry eyes, he was charging at me. And in my loving service to him, I was shooting sharp arrows into his body. Krishna was bleeding, and I was shooting more and more arrows. For Bhishma, this was the most beautiful darshan. Krishna was accepting my sharp arrows, making him bleed with the same happiness as a devotee offering him fragrant, soft flower petals. Because they were off, he knew I was offering them with love according to his desire. Krishna broke his own promise to protect the promise of his devotee. And here's Bhishma. Such a famous, exalted brahmachari. When he was a child, he took a vow of brahmacharya. And he followed it in every way. He was very austere, so pure-hearted. And now, in his last moments, before he dies, he's remembering the love of the gopis. How the gopis were so attracted to Krishna. And he's remembering the Rasa Leela. Why would the greatest brahmachari be remembering the Rasa Leela at the time of death unless it's totally transcendentally highest level of ecstatic pure love? Bhishma's praying, the gopis are so attracted to Krishna. They're constantly remembering Krishna with such deep, pure, sweet love that when Krishna disappeared from them at the Rasa Leela, they were imitating Krishna's movements and enacting Krishna's pastimes in a complete state of absorption. He praises the gopis of Vrindavan, and he praises Krishna for attracting such love from the gopis. Let me remember that Krishna. Let my mind be fixed on that Krishna. Meanwhile, as actually a little before that, Yudhisthira Maharaj asked many questions, and Yudhisthira Maharaj described in great detail the principles of Dharma, the principles of Varnashram, the principles of almost every aspect of life. And now, when he sees the sun entering into the northern hemisphere, he understood this is an auspicious time to die. He forgets everything else and is just looking upon the beauty of Krishna offering these prayers. How the gopis were attracted to you. How you arranged for when Yudhisthira Maharaj performed the Rajasuya Yajna. Most important part of that Rajasuya Yajna is to honor and worship the most important person. And usually it's the king himself who gets worshipped. But Yudhisthira Maharaj worshipped Krishna and had the whole Yudhisthira Maharaj do the Aswamedha Yajna to glorify Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira performed the Rajasuya Yajna to glorify Krishna, so that everyone in the entire universe would know without a doubt that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the most important, most worshipable person forever. And Bhishma for offering these prayers of pure love and surrender. He's gazing at the moon-like face of Krishna, and by his own free will, he left his body. So many people were witness to this. Supremely glorious. He's uttering the names and the glories of Krishna, gazing upon his beautiful face. And just Sharanagati. It's not that he died. He totally threw his thinking, his feeling, his willing, his everything. He surrendered his body, mind, words, and life to Krishna. And in that surrender, he just gave his soul. It's like took his soul out of his own body and just Krishna. Like that. In his total surrender, he gave up his body and returned to the spiritual world. Seeing this, Krishna, the Pandavas, Narada, Vyas, Vasishta, all the great sages and rishis, they're all present. Total silence. That's how awesome it was. The Bhagavatam tells it was as quiet as the birds at the end of the day. Now everyone, please listen to the birds. Whenever you hear a bird, think of Krishna. Krishna, think of Krishna's surrendered devotee. Total quiet. And everybody's hearts were just such love of offering, of gratitude and affection to Bhishma. The demigod showered flowers upon him. Krishna himself honored the life and the passing of Bhishma. He came all the way to that battlefield from Hastinapur. One, because Bhishma's teachings completely eradicated all the guilt feelings of Yudhisthira Maharaj so that he could perform his duty. And two, so that Krishna could be right there along with his pure devotee Bhishma for the end of his life. Interesting, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Srila Haridas Thakur passed away, pressing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet upon his heart, gazing upon the moon-like face of Gauranga, tears falling from his eyes and love and gratitude, with the holy name of the Lord being chanted by all the devotees. He gave up his life. And Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya, and all the devotees, the first thing they were thinking is, he left just like Bhishma. Krishna then took Yudhisthira and the Pandavas back to Hastinapur. And he stayed with Yudhisthira Maharaj and all the devotees for a few months. Krishna is so kind, just making sure everyone's, all right. Meanwhile, the people in Dwarka, they're suffering love and separation. Every time Krishna is about to come, the imminent love of separation of somebody keeps him in Hastinapur and brings him back to Kurukshetra. Krishna is simultaneously doing everything that's perfect for everyone. This part is really special. If you were asleep, please at least wake up for this part. It's just a simple sentence in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's extraordinary. The simplest things are so extraordinary if we just try to understand the depth of the lesson, the culture, and the nature of Krishna. Awake? Here it is. Krishna stayed for a few months just to be with all the queens and all the ladies and all the princes and all the king and the warriors and the people of Hastinapur. Then Krishna approached Yudhisthira Maharaj and asked his permission to leave. That's quite profound. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna already said this in Bhagavad Gita. All material and spiritual worlds emanate from me. All living beings are my children, aham bija pratapita. Those who know this perfectly will worship me with all their hearts. Krishna's the Ishwara Parama Krishna. Lord Brahma declares, he is the supreme controller of all controllers. The source of everything and everyone that exists. Lord Yamaraj in Srimad Bhagavatam describes, he is the source of all religion, all dharma. It's all coming from him. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's that wonderful story where millions of Lord Brahmas from all different universes are coming to Dwarka to bow down and surrender to Krishna. That's Krishna. Krishna's asking permission from Yudhisthira to go. Even though he's longing to be with his devotees in Dwarka, and even though the devotees in Dwarka are yearning and longing to be with Krishna, Krishna will not leave until Yudhisthira Maharaj gives his heartfelt permission. Bhaktivatsal. Krishna is so dear to his devotees, and the devotees are so dear to Krishna. Yudhisthira Maharaj, as hard as it was for him, for Krishna's pleasure, he gave his heartfelt blessings. Yes, my Lord. Oh, he didn't say this, but we can understand, O most worshipable, supreme object of all my love and reverence, you have my permission to to go. And it was that time that Krishna began his journey. And there's a beautiful, so many verses in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describing the condition of the devotees, the family, everyone in Hastinapur. Krishna was leaving. They were seeing him every day. They were seeing his smile. They were feeling his glances. They were watching his pastimes. How could you live after seeing that when he leaves? It describes, you know, Kunti Devi and other ladies of the family were on top of palaces running to see and watch Krishna leaving with tears flooding their eyes. Arjuna is holding an umbrella over Krishna's head as he's going to his chariot. Uddhava's whisking him with the chamara, and he's leaving us. And when Krishna, we have to have this human sense of reality when we understand these transcendental pastimes. When Krishna was leaving Hastinapur, for all these devotees, they understood that this is most probably the last time I will ever see Krishna in my life. And for most of them it was. They were devastated in the ecstasy of love. How Krishna stirs the love of his devotees. How Krishna attracts our hearts through this sambhog and viraha, vipralamba, this meeting and separation. So we come to this verse today. I will now begin the class. If I'm inconveniencing you, please know that my intention is to please you. The citizens of Dwarka for so many months and months and months, they don't know if Krishna will ever return. How they're suffering, his children, his queens, all the devotees, the Yadus. And while they're in that state, in Dwarka, the residents of the residents of Hastinapur, they're watching Krishna go, and he may never come back. So what is their feelings? The Dwarka people don't even know he's coming yet. They're just suffering separation, and the devotees in Hastinapur are watching him leave. And meanwhile, the residents of Vrindavan, that's like a whole nother eternal pastime. Krishna has been away from Vrindavan for so many years. And a moment in separation from Krishna is like a yuga. The gopis, when they were standing right in front of the beautiful form of Shama Sundar, they would criticize Lord Brahma for putting eyelids over their eyes, because every time they blinked, that little So many of you are blinking, but you don't even know you're blinking. if you watch somebody, you'll see that they're blinking. But when you're blinking, you don't even know you're blinking. But there's so many blinks. It lasts just a moment. That time seemed like thousands of years for gopis not being able to see Krishna. So how the residents of Vrindavan, they are in the highest, deepest state of ecstatic love for Krishna in their separation from him. So at this moment when he's leaving Hastinapur, everyone's suffering separation everywhere. And today, this chapter is entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka. Every moment they're just hoping, praying, expecting for months and months and months. And suddenly, from the outskirts of Dwarka, they hear Krishna blow his conch shell. Panchajanya. And Sukadev and Suta Goswami describes that the conch shell was like a swan. And touching Krishna's lips turned pink, like a white swan that turned pink in contact with Krishna. And the sound of that conch shell, multiplied by tens and millions of times, it's going to be like, you know, the first monsoon rain that cools off Mumbai. You know, they were in the drought of separation, burning in the massive fire of that love. And hearing the conch shell was like a most pleasing, blissful rainfall, because they didn't see Krishna yet, but they knew he was here. Upon hearing that conch shell, the devotees of Dwarka, wherever they were, in whatever palace, in whatever house, in whatever temple, in whatever road, whoever, whatever their varna, whatever their ashram, whatever anything else, everybody came running to greet Krishna, to make Krishna happy. And here it is describing ladies on the roofs of the palaces. In Hastinapur, they were on the roofs of the palaces crying because Krishna was going. And here they're on the roofs of their palaces celebrating and smiling and laughing and dancing because Krishna was coming. This is pastimes. Krishna's inconceivable, eternal, wonderful pastimes of love. And the citizen said, O Lord, you are worshipped by all the demigods, like Brahma, the four sunas, and even the King of Heaven. You are the ultimate rest for those who are really aspiring to achieve the highest benefit of life. You are the supreme transcendental Lord, and inevitable time can never exert its influence upon you. Again, this word, inevitable time. And I have inevitably gone way over time. I'm so grateful to each and every one of you. Let us take these words from Srimad Bhagavatam as our life and soul. We find in these, the citizens are celebrating Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. But what they're saying to one another is so profoundly philosophical. Even the gopis' prayers in the Gopi Gita is so philosophical. Kunti's prayers, Prahlad's prayers, the prayers of all the devotees are the ultra perfection of emotion, realization, and philosophical. Why? Because all this philosophy is a way of glorifying Krishna. Thank you very much.